This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com. USA Today's Arizona Cardinals site. My co-host is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site. He's got some inside sources. I've got media access. We're both big fans of the Cardinals and have been for some time. And this is show 195. It is our training camp preview. But it's a little bit more than just the training camp preview. Because Seth, guess what? What happened? We don't have a David Johnson deal, but we have something that's probably as important as that.
Yeah, and it just, you know, came out of nowhere. We were waiting, obviously, the time had passed for Le'Veon Bell's deal to be able to get done, but we were waiting for a deal to get done, and we knew the numbers that Bell turned down. And so we were just waiting, like, what was the holdup? And I think, I mean, something you and I covered on the last – on the last show, and it's something that we've talked about before, the holdup has always been the real money, the guaranteed money. How much money were these guys going to get? And Todd Gurley comes in and just absolutely flies by any number that you and I have even discussed. I mean, it was $15 million more in guaranteed money than you and I had even talked about that Todd Gurley ended up. And that's a huge number. I mean, that's a substantial number.
And if you haven't heard what the numbers is, if you haven't run across that yet, Todd Gurley signed. Now, again, this is a 23-year-old Todd Gurley who still actually had 2 years left on his deal. So he had the original fourth year of his rookie contract this year. He has the fifth-year team extension for 2019, but the Rams signed him to a four-year contract extension worth $60 million with $45 million in what they called guaranteed money, including a $20 million signing bonus. Absurd, crazy money. $15 million per year average for a running back on those 4 years. And what was it that you were telling me that the previous number for guarantees for a running back was it 18 point something? Is that what it was? I mean,
18.25 in terms of veterans, obviously, previous rookie deals when it was absurd. And now even new rookie deals like Saquon Barkley's $31 million guaranteed were a little different, but veteran running backs, 8.25 was the number.
That's crazy. And you know, we'll see how this contract is structured, but we know that up front he's getting $20 million. There's another $25 million in guarantees. It probably kicks in. I would guess that first year that probably everything for the next couple of years. When I know next year's contract is guaranteed, kind of. It was probably locks in that for guarantee in probably 2020, I would guess. But we'll have to wait and see how it's actually structured, because that becomes important. And why is this important? Because David Johnson, that's the other big news, because David Johnson, his holdout's done. So that was kind of a weird thing. He held out of mini camp, the only part he had to be at. He reported early. He was able to report, being a returning injured player, was able to report on Monday. He did so and report, you know, on social media, announced that he's back. He's putting his trust in his agency to get a deal done. Apparently, there have been positive strides taken to getting a new deal done. So I would anticipate, even in the absence of Steve Keim, who was the other news that we missed, is that Steve Keim suspended for 5 weeks after everything came down. And so they're still in contract talks, and I wouldn't be surprised if things happen in the next couple of weeks, because that's always when it's happened. If you remember the last few years under Steve Kuhn, when do they announce contract extensions for players entering their final year? So you got Patrick Peterson, it happened. You had Tyrann Mathieu, it happened. You had Carson Palmer and Larry Fitzgerald, which were surprise ones where it happened. They take care of that during training camp. So the thing is now, what with that Gurley deal, how does that change things for Johnson and his people and with the Cardinals? Or perhaps do you think maybe they knew this was coming down the pike with agents talking to each other?
I think when you look at what has been tweeted out by Gurley, Le'Veon Bell, even David Johnson to an extent, it seems like there was conversations. It seems like they had an understanding of what their objective was. And the objective was simple, to reset the running back market. The objective was to change the financial aspects of what running backs, where running backs were in the market. And, you know, something you and I talked about before the show started, when you look at Todd Gurley's guarantees, and they're not actual guarantees, they're what they call practical guarantees, which means, you know, it's like roster bonuses and workout bonus and just, you know, kind of stuff that they
can also, non-salaries.
Right. All the stuff that they can stuff in into a contract. When you look at those, the $45 million number, all of a sudden, it creates the running back equal to the top wide receivers in the NFL, the top cornerbacks in the NFL, and many of the top pass rushers in the NFL. For instance, Chandler Jones' deal with the Arizona Cardinals was for $51 million in practical guarantees. That was over 5 years, I believe it was. And so, you know, when you look at those numbers, they're virtually, you know, the same as what Gurley got over 4 years. And so the numbers, all of a sudden, they reset the market and understanding of what you have to pay running backs. And it goes to more of what Jess and I have talked about with the David Johnson, Le'Veon Bell situation. We hadn't really discussed Gurley because he still has 2 years, right? Like
this came out of nowhere. This, you know, we knew that was going to happen. We figured that next,
it would be next year.
We always thought it was either going to be Bell or Johnson that reset this market. And we heard that Bell turned down 5 years, $70 million. That's the report that came out. 5 years, $70 million he turned down. And so, and with that coming out, you had to think that's kind of the target that Johnson's cap. Now that this is this, before we say it, this is changing the running back market. This is changing the running back market for the top backs out
well,
there.
But even more than that, I think it's changing the running back market for truly three down running backs.
Yes.
Not top ball carrier running backs, but guys that are going to be 400 plus touch players.
Le'Veon Bell, outstanding runner and receiver. Todd Gurley, outstanding runner and receiver. David Johnson, outstanding runner, receiver. And, you know, we're going to see that. That's the type of running back. This is the new NFL. If you can't be just a bruising running back, they'll run you to the ground and go on to the next guy. The guys that are elite are the pass catchers as well. Saquon Barkley is going to be the same way.
Right, exactly. And so, you know, when you look at the numbers now, it's completely different. Like I said, it's changed what the value of the position is, and it now puts the pressure on the Cardinals, because now the Cardinals are in a weird conundrum that they have to figure out. And it's something that we'll discuss further along, but the Cardinals have to figure out now, okay, are we going to pay David Johnson, or are we going to risk creating a very uncomfortable relationship with David Johnson over the next three seasons? And it's a real conversation that's going to be had, because when you look at the practical guarantee of $45 million, the Cardinals can basically keep David Johnson's rights for the next three seasons, basically 1 year at a time, and it's going to end up costing them less than 35 with all these new French, with all these new numbers that are coming in. It's still not going to get to 45. And what that's going to do is that's going to save them any guaranteed money. Because, you know, heaven forbid they sign David Johnson to a 4 year, you know, I'm just going to spitball numbers, 4 year, you know, $50 million contract with $35 million guaranteed, and something happens in year 1.5, so after 2018, but during 2019, and he's never able to play again. Well, they're still on the hook for, you know, basically $20 million in guaranteed money. Whereas if they let him play out his $1.8 million this year on the last year of his rookie deal, and then they go and franchise him, you know, probably going to be right around $13-14 million with these new running back numbers. And they franchise him, and then he makes it through that year, and then they franchise him at, you know, at $15-16 million. And guess what? Well, they're done, and he's 30 years old, and they don't really have to make a long-term decision or commitment. And so that's going to be a conversation and a question that they're going to have to answer probably fairly quickly, too, I would assume.
Yeah, that's true. And just in case you're wondering, all reports are the Cardinal side, they want him to stay a Cardinal. They want to have him here long term. David Johnson said the same thing. He wants to stay here. He said the team wants him there for a long time. So, you know, how I see this going, a long term deal gets done. And in fact, it would set an uncomfortable precedent, because anytime they've had a core player, and there is no doubt that David Johnson is a core player entering, who's still in the prime of his career, they have never let one of those players, with the, you know, I'm going to go with the one exception. That was when they traded for Chandler Jones, they didn't lock him up immediately. That was different because he hadn't been with the team. They didn't know what he could do. So they didn't know truly if he was a core player or not. They've always taken those players and extended them. They've not let them get to free agency. Calais Campbell they did, but remember, 30 years old. 30 years old, that's kind of the magic
already word. Paid him once. So yes,
and they had already given a big contract.
It would be the equivalent of them signing David Johnson to, you know, that 4 year $50 million contract, and then he plays it all the way out and he has a Pro Bowl season at 31, but then they decide not to sign him to another extension at 31.
And no one would feel bad. No, everyone would be great, go get your money somewhere else. We want you, but we can't pay you that much at that age.
Right, exactly. But it's the fact that he's only going to be 27 on this contract that makes it a difficult sell. I mean, let's be honest. It makes it a difficult sell to the fan base to say, we're not sure we want to do this.
Right. And so I think it happens, but I think the numbers we're going to probably have to see. I don't think we're going to get quite as close. Obviously, Todd Gurley had his higher starting point and is younger, so they could put more money there. Now, I think $20 million up front, that's your standard. You're going to give him $20 million in a signing bonus, and then probably 4 years. What you said, 4 years, 50, that's probably going to be the sweet spot where it's still up there in per year average. But it's kind of saying, oh, I'm older. I'm different than Todd Gurley, because Todd Gurley has become if you check out the Rams Wire site, you see something. Todd Gurley is talking about everything. He's kind of become becoming the face of the NFL and labor. Is kind of what he talks. He's talking about preparing for a player strike or a lockout, talking about how players are angry about that NBA money that's going around. So I think 4 years, 50, the number you said is right around the sweet spot, and you're going to have to go $20 million up front and then throw probably another $15 million in guarantees along the way to make it. You might have to go, yeah, probably $35 million in practical guarantees, which is, you know, and you end up having to that 4-year deal. It's structured probably like the Tyrann Mathieu contract, where you reevaluate it after 2020 and you see what the deal is.
Well, and after 2020, he'll be 29 years old.
Right.
So it'll be a very comfortable situation for the Cardinals to make a reevaluation of it. I mean, at that point, they'll be able to say, look, you know, you've kind of tailed off, or look, you know, we want to extend you another 2 years on top of this to 32, and you know, we'll give you some more guaranteed money, and you know, obviously from the Cardinals' perspective, kick the can down the line a little bit too, to give them some salary cap room. So it's, you know, it's the conversation that'll be had, and that's where you want to be if you're the Cardinals. You want to give yourself as much, you know, time to make these moves like they did with Tyrann Mathieu and see what they can do.
And to those of you who think the Cardinals might be afraid of a contract with Johnson because of what happened with Tyrann Mathieu, I do want to remind you that the two players, while they, you know, they did have the whole missing type as the major injury, David Johnson's injury was much different. It was a wrist injury. And what we have to remember is that Tyrann Mathieu entered the league with durability questions, not because of what happened in college, but because of his size and frame and his style of play. He was never built for the NFL. So there was always that risk. David Johnson, on the other hand, well, at that, and they paid Mathieu after having him blow out a knee once. That's different than David Johnson. He had a broken wrist. And if you want to wonder about his durability, I think what probably is a more fair thing to do is to look at that. You know, yes, there is this, the last two games in the regular season he's gotten hurt in now. But if you look at that knee injury, when he got hurt with the knee, that tells you the type of body, the lower body in particular, that Johnson has. Because I don't know if there was anyone who saw his knee buckle like that, that everyone thought, oh crap, his career's over. He's not going to be the same player ever again. And it was just a sprained medial MCL. It was pretty minor. I think that is more telling of the type of player that he is. He has the frame for the NFL. He's a big back. He can do a lot of things, and he hasn't had a major knee injury. And so to try and equate him to Tyrann Mathieu is a little unfair. Yes, it's the same type of scenario, but there are two different type of builds. And yes, running backs get beat up a lot, but this is a young man whose lower body seems now. And I can even go back last year, Tyvon Branch. When we've seen players with their knees do that, Tyvon Branch had his knee exploded. Tyrann Mathieu, his knee basically exploded. When that happened to David Johnson, knee sprain. And so, you know, when do you think it happens? Do you believe that they're going to go with the franchise, or do you think they get the deal done here? And for me, like I said, this is a no-brainer. Josh Rosen he's critical. He's the key. But David Johnson is the face of the franchise and your most important offensive player. And it's not like they don't have cap space the next couple of years.
Right, and that's why I think something gets done. It's just, it's amazing that it's gotten to this point where it's even fathomable that it might be the route that they take, right? Like, that's where we're at right now. It's really odd. After it seemed like a foregone conclusion that they would be extending DJ, because like you said, not only is he the focal point of the offense in what is a very important transition period, but moreover, they've got so much money next year and 2020. I mean, they have so much money. So why is there even a question of this at this point?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense at all. And with that, we'll wrap up the David Johnson part of our training camp preview, because we haven't even talked about training camp yet, except for the fact that David Johnson showed up. So coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, we will come back and we will talk all about training camp as that opens on Friday. We're coming up next with that on Rise Up Sea Red. As a reminder, I want to remind you listeners of our friends over at harrys.com. It's coming up on a year, I think, where I made the switch, from the electric razor to the Harry's blades. And there's been a couple of situations where I didn't want to bring my blade with me on a trip. So I used the electric razor, and I don't know why. I don't think I'm ever going back. And the Harry's blade gives me an absolute fantastic shave. And the best part is that to do it at a super reasonable price. So Harry stands behind the quality of their blades. And I'll tell you, it gives you a great shave. Switching razors isn't always easy. So there's a trial offer that you can claim by going to harrys.com/cred. The deal of the offer is this. You get the $13 value trial set. Doesn't cost you a thing. It comes what you need for a close comfortable shave. You get the handle. You get a 5-blade razor to test it out. You get the shave gel. Oh, it smells great. It's fantastic. And a travel braid cover. You get all that. Test it out. The quality is guaranteed. It's half the price of other blades. So if you like it, $2 a blade. And this isn't your crappy disposable blades. These are high quality, very good blades that give you a great shave. So listeners of this show can redeem their trial set at harrys.com/cred. Make sure you go there, redeem the offer, and let them know that we sent you to support the show. We're back on the Rise Up Secret podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, and it's time for training camp. So we've got position battles, we've got players, we have breakout players, we've got roster battles and position battles and bubble players and undrafted rookies and draft picks and possible disappointments and stuff like that. So we're here to break that all down. And we're going to start with just talking on the whole. Seth and I are going to give you our three players who we are watching in particular. Seth, who's one of the first players that you got your eyes on in camp this year?
The first guy I'm going to be watching, and Jeff and I didn't go over this, so hopefully there's not any repeats, but we didn't want to spoil it. But the first guy I'm watching is DJ Humphreys. It is a critical year for the 2015 first round pick. They have Ray Brown, who is one of the better offensive line coaches in the NFL. They have an alleged change towards his strength coming as their offensive focus, as they'll be running the ball a little bit more. And they, quite frankly, need him more than anybody to step up and solidify that left tackle position because, you know, they're really old across the offensive line overall. Obviously, DJ's under 25, but when you look at it, Mike Iupati and A.Q. Shipley and newly signed Andre Smith are all on the wrong side of 30. So these are all three guys that it's really year to year whether or not they're able to hold up. So getting an anchor on the offensive line like DJ Humphreys is going to be key. Just keeping him on the field, let's be honest. Him just being out there for 16 games is going to be one of the biggest keys to the season, but it's going to be something to watch as we head into the training camp.
For me, my number one player that I'm watching is, well, it's kind of critical. He is the difference maker between the type of defense, whether it's a good defense or a great defense. And for me, that's Robert Kimdichie. Robert Kimdichie has to perform this year. Everything that we've heard thus far in the offseason tells us that he's on the right track. And there's really no excuse. So he's healthy. He's focused. He's playing what is a more natural position for him in a defense that requires him to think less and react more and play fast and penetrate. And if recall, remember, he was buried behind Olson Pierre. That's an interesting story that Olson Pierre, who was kind of taken a step back a little bit, and he became a very disruptive player. But Robert Kimdichie is the guy that I'm watching. He's got to stay healthy. And this is the year, if he's going to do it, who could be a breakout player, who can be that disruptive force, because they got the stuff on the edge. You've got Chandler Jones. If you get Kandice disrupting in the middle, that's going to make those linebackers' job so easy.
And yeah, I mean, it's bad that three of our first four are going to be former first-round picks. But that's the reality of where we're at with the Cardinals right now. And so my number two guy is the guy that's going to be kind of lining up behind Kandice, and that's Deion Buchanan. If ever there was a defense, a season, a time for Buchanan to break out, it's now, right? Like, going to play the Thomas Davis role in what the Cardinals are going to do, implementing a Carolina Panthers style defense, kind of a role that is built for a hybrid linebacker, safety player, slightly undersized, you know, a guy that uses his speed more than anything else on the defense. And it is a massively important season for Deion Buchanan to kind of show that they have at least one linebacker that they can lock onto moving forward.
For me, player number two, and I got my eyes on Bryce Butler because he's going to show up on one of my other lists later on. The Cardinals need something to happen at that number two wide receiver spot. Bryce Butler, who has been the perennially underperforming player, again, the stat is, hasn't had a 400-yard season since high school. He's not a rookie in this league. I believe what this is year. He's got 5 years in the league already, plus his years in college. You know, I've got my eyes on him because it sounds like they are – that's going to be one of the positions that we're going to be watching. It's wide receiver two and three and four. But with what he has been saying and what the coaches have been saying, he has a chance to kind of break out. So my eyes are on Bryce Butler. Is he going to just be all talk again, or is he going to take it? Has it really been that he hasn't had the opportunity?
My final guy I'm really going to be paying attention to in training camp. And the easy ones, you know, are the quarterbacks, rookies, you know, guys that are coming into the season. But a guy I really am going to focus on because he's had a really interesting career is Jamar Taylor. The Cardinals desperately need people to establish themselves in this secondary. You know, obviously they have Patrick Peterson, but they're going to find out a lot about Buda Baker. They're going to find out, you know, what Antoine Bethea, another 30-plus-year-old, Bethea is 34. You know, they're going to find out what they have in Brandon Williams finally. But Jamar Taylor, he's done it before. He's been successful in a zone-based scheme before, and that's what the Cardinals are going to hedge more towards. And does that create for him another successful season and kind of extend his time in Arizona? Because he's on one of those deals that Jess talked about earlier that, guess what, the Cardinals are going to come to the table with him at the end of this season and say, all right, that year was fun, good luck in free agency. Or they're going to say, hey, we got a guy that played well for us that's under a pretty cost-contained contract the next 2 years. Let's keep him on because he's young and he played well at cornerback, a position that we've struggled to fill, obviously opposite Patrick Peterson, for more than a year at a time. So it's going to be really interesting to see where they play Taylor. Is he going to play in the slot? Is he going to line up on the boundary? How are they going to utilize the asset that is Jamar Taylor, and does he step up to the plate?
For me, my last player that I've got my eye on, I think everyone has their eye on him, and that would be Josh Rosen. I'm unsure how much of a quarterback competition there's actually going to be. Like I've said, I've been on the record many times. I think this competition, quote, we have with air quotes, competition, is competition, but I see it being more like the Drew Stanton, Blaine Gabbert it's going to take something extraordinary from Rosen, not only on the field, but in the locker room, to change the perception that's already there, that Sam Bradford is the starter. But I still want to see him play, just like we all wanted to see Blaine Gabbert play. And we all said, okay, and we said on this show, hey, he should look like the best player on the field because we'll be playing against third stringers. And he did for the most part. So Josh Rosen will, I don't know, I would imagine that they're going to give him reps in the preseason against twos rather than ones, because if you have a starter, this is the perfect way to let your rookie look good, is to play him against the twos. But I've got my eyes on him, because what do we want to see? We want to see some promise and some hope, and that is critical going forward. Show some hope.
It is. And Rosen is the obvious one. He's the one that everybody's going to have his eyes on him. But there's not a single more important player on the roster right now than Josh Rosen. And that's not hyperbole by me. That's not hyperbole from Jess. That is a true statement, because the Cardinals desperately need, not just because he's a first-round pick, but they need this to be a hit. They need this to be a home run, because what it does is it sets them up for 2019, 2020, 2021, and 2022 with a cost-controlled quarterback where they can invest in other areas without really having to stress out or think about it. And so being able to do that would be a huge benefit, and something I'm really interested to see if they're able to do.
And moving on to the next part, and again, talking about Rosen and Bradford, if they're for anything else, as much as I'm expecting Bradford to be solid, if he can stay healthy, he'll be solid. The problem is, if you get Bradford through one healthy year, you know something's coming. And so to have a hope in Rosen, to know that he's ready for 2019. If you can somehow get Bradford through 2018 and have a good season, there's no way you roll that dice again. You can't do it. You can't do it because that knee's going to – it's not going to blow up. It's just going to stop liking football.
Right. I don't know if you read the ESPN article, but they were doing the tier rankings of quarterbacks. And spoiler alert, Josh Rosen made it into tier three, but he was the very last quarterback in tier three, and he just scraped by. But it was interesting what the comments were. And one of the comments was, if it's 7-on-7, he's a tier one quarterback every day. So, yeah, if Sam Bradford doesn't have to worry about getting hit, if he doesn't have to worry about moving around, if he can just stand back and throw the ball around, maybe there's 10 quarterbacks in the same class as him, but that's not, unfortunately, the way the NFL works. So like Jess has said, even if you get 16 games out of Bradford, you still want to go into 2019 with the idea of Josh Rosen being the guy, because you're playing with fire as is with Bradford. But if you get one good year out of him, you just call it a win at that point.
You're like, okay, we did it. We bridged that gap and we're
right,
ready.
Exactly.
To move on. All right. So next up on our training camp, we're saying our breakout players, who is going to step up and have the year that breaks out. Now, the players that are being named as possibilities, you know, Bryce Butler's one of them. Ricky Seals-Jones is another. Robert Condici. Who, for me, my number one breakout player, I think it's going to be, I've already mentioned, is the player I'm watching. It's Robert Condici, because he is undoubtedly the most talented defensive lineman that we have had in the last decade. You know, if you look at Calais Campbell, you look at Darnell Dockett, Robert Condici is more physically gifted than either one of those players. And I think this is the year that he figures it out. I think he has figured it out. He's got a coach that can tolerate the eccentricities that there are to Robert Kimdichie. And I think that might have been part of the problem. While Bruce Arians loved him, I don't think he loved the guy as much. He was less tolerant of off-the-field Kimdichie. So I think he is going to be an impact player this year.
You know, and I think he can be. I really do. I think it's an important year for him, obviously. But I think you're right. I think he can be an impact player that really sets out and changes the dynamic of the defense. For me, the first guy that I think is going to have a breakout season, and it maybe it's a cop-out, but I think Hassan Reddick's really going to thrive in this defense. I think Hassan Reddick's going to break out as a player focusing as the Sam linebacker, the strong side linebacker in this defense. He's going to have an opportunity to really focus on a singular position and learn how to play it correctly, something he wasn't afforded the opportunity with last year, just because of unfortunate circumstances and injuries. So that's who I think is prime for a breakout this year.
And I would agree with that. In fact, I like that pick, especially since if we look at the beginning of last year, his first couple of games playing in space, not playing on the edge, but playing in space, he made plays. He was around the ball. He was doing good things. What ruined him was having to go from hand in the dirt on the edge to playing in space and then going to outside linebacker. He just wasn't ready for that. And even though the pass rushing skills are there, I think this defense and this linebacker's coach and this defensive scheme is going to, in the fact that he's played linebacker now for a year, he's going to know more. He's going to be more than just an athlete. He will be a better trained. He'll be an athlete who knows a little bit about linebacker. Not quite like Brandon Williams did look lost at cornerback. I think Hassan Reddick will look like he'll kind of look like he's supposed to this year. For me, the next breakout, and for some people already broke out, but what we're talking about is a player on defense. I think Buda Baker's that guy, because we saw the numbers, that just the sheer impact he can have. You know, Tyvon Branch was having what Bruce Arians believed was a Pro Bowl type year. He didn't think he'd make the Pro Bowl, but he believed that what he was doing was Pro Bowl production. And the second he left the lineup and Buda Baker went in, guess what? He put up numbers that Tyvon Branch never did. And so I think he's going to have that sort of impact here. I don't think, obviously, he's not the ball hawk that Tyrann Mathieu was, but I think his ability to be, well, the fact that he's a thicker, more durable, stronger and faster version of Tyrann Mathieu, he's not going to be, I don't think he's going to have the highlight reel interception since his hands are kind of his bane, but I think Buda Baker breaks out and becomes not only the all pro that he was as a special teamer, I think he becomes a legitimate force in the defensive backfield.
Yeah. And I think you're right. He's going to go from star to superstar. And I still think that's a breakout. I mean, I don't think that's wrong in any way. The guy that I expect to blossom this year and kind of break out is going to be a guy that got paid, and he's been a solid NFL starter, but he doesn't have any Pro Bowls. There's nothing behind the money he got paid, but I think Justin Pugh puts together a really good year. I think he's a guy that I understand that the contract doesn't make sense with what I'm saying, but when you look at what Pugh has done on the field, it hasn't been consistent and it hasn't been dominant. And so what I think is going to happen is he's going to put it together this year. He's going to stay healthy. He's going to be able to really show himself as a dominant guard. And I think you're going to see a guy that makes the the jump from, you know, maybe this guy's good to this is a Pro Bowl caliber player. And again, I think having Ray Brown is going to be a big reason for that.
And for me, that's actually a really good pick. And I think the contract in part puts him out there as the name recognition. Like if you look at, you know, Jared Verdier hadn't made a Pro Bowl. Mike Iupati already had been a Pro Bowl player, and he was a Pro Bowler when he first came over. But I think a player who's been very good, who's been pretty solid, and he can take the next. Well, now he's going to play in one position, which is even better. He's going to play one position, and now people say, "Oh, he got paid good money," so the eyes are going to be on him. I think that's a very, very good pick, and I'm actually glad that one of us picked something up on offense as a breakout player because.
It is kind of a dry position group right now because it's either known or, all right, let's see what these guys can do.
Well, and if you look at it, so potential breakout players, there's just, if you look at Ricky Seals-Jones, I'm not ready to make them, you know, he had three good games with Blaine Gabbert throwing to him and he was wide open. Bryce Butler, while I'm going to watch him, I'm not ready to call him a breakout player based on, you know, the last 10 years of football. So that with that, yeah. So any other player that you could see breaking out this year, I think for me that's where I'm going to stop is at those two. There could be others.
It wouldn't be a huge breakout as much as it would be. It would be great to see a rookie insert himself into this offensive line, but you know, watch Mason Cole. If he gets a chance, I don't think he's going to relinquish a starting position. Maybe that's not a breakout player. And, you know, he's not even really one to watch in camp, but like he's the type of kid that he gets. I mean, he literally started every game in college at Michigan. It's not like we're talking about, you know, UTEP, like no offense to UTEP or anything, but I mean, he started every single game at Michigan. Like this kid can play.
And what was it? 3 out of 4 years, he was playing really out of position.
Right. Exactly. He played left tackle. He's not a left tackle. It's going to be like, I really like this kid. I think next year's his breakout year, but I just like it. Like you said, offensively, it's such a underwhelming and kind of unknown group right now. It's really hard to pick.
And so with that, we'll take a break and we'll come back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast. And we're going to talk some more training camp, position battles, rookies and undrafted rookies who think we'll have a chance. So that's coming up next on the Rise Up C-Red podcast. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And so again, talking more about training camp, next up on our list of things to discuss are, what are the position battles? And we've probably talked it, you know, if you listen to the radio, if you read our sites, these are things we're already talking, that we're already writing about and people are discussing. But I think it's a good time. It's still worth talking about because there are some particular position battles and they're not all of them are on the starting lineup. And for me, I think the number one intriguing position battle might not really be a position battle as we talked about. That's at quarterback. And there's an understated one as well. And that all circles around Josh Rosen. Well, one, if Sam Bradford's healthy, I don't think there's any way that Rosen can supplant him. And people look at Russell Wilson over Matt Flynn, things like that. That's a completely different scenario. Matt Flynn really had no cachet in the league other than a fantastic pair of games at the end of the season. You know, he had fame for being a backup. Jimmy Garoppolo, that would be kind of the case if they had signed Jimmy Garoppolo and then drafted a Russell Wilson. That would be something. Now, Jimmy Garoppolo's got a little more cachet because, you know, obviously he's never lost. But Sam Bradford comes in, like Carson Palmer, everyone in the locker room respects him. They love him. They think he is a great quarterback. So, but how much could Josh Rosen really compete? And that it's more about not so much that this is a position battle of who might start, but could Rosen at least put himself in the conversation? And then on the secondary one, what happens with Mike Glennon? Would Glennon become the number? Will Rosen show enough that he'll be the number two? Or will Glennon be that reliable backup that they turn to in an emergency?
And I think that's a really fair question as far as the quarterback battles. It's not as simple, like you said, as one versus two, but there are legitimate questions about who the lead backup is. And I don't, again, this, I'm without sounding, you know, too hyperbolic or dramatic or anything like that, I'm going to be super disappointed if Josh Rosen isn't the lead backup. Aren't you?
You know, I look at it and I'm wondering, who's going to be the, you know, that's the thing. I'm kind of torn behind. So I see them two kind of being backup A and backup B. Like if there's a game scenario, so this is where I'd say, okay, I'm going to have Mike Glennon as my backup at least early on in the season. And then he comes in the game, at least say less the first quarter of the season, if they need to get through a game. So not to throw Rosen, who will have fewer reps and all that side of sort of thing. But if Bradford gets hurt in game one, game two, game three, Glennon finishes that, maybe Rosen's the guy that gets the start the next week, giving with the, you know, kind of the one would be Glennon would be more for coming into the game to finish the game, as he's probably more adept at managing a game and getting through a game with limited reps. While Rosen, he'd be the one you'd want to start. At least that's in my mind, that's kind of how it would work, at least early in the season.
So the position battle that I'm really, and I talked about it earlier, but I'm really intrigued in is obviously Jamar Taylor, Ben Wickery. And Brandon Williams, right? Like, I guess.
The ones actually, let me see, who David Merritt, their defensive backs coach, they didn't even mention Ben Wickery because I think
they're going to play him at safety, right?
He might actually be their third safety. He might be locked in there right now since they didn't sign Trey Boston, unless something else happens. So he mentioned four names. He said Jamar Taylor. He said Brandon Williams. He said Lou Young. And he said Jonathan Moxie. Those are the four guys that David Merritt said on the Cardinals Underground podcast this last week.
Jonathan Moxie is a fake name. You can't fool me, just root. But yeah, I mean, but honestly, it's Taylor and Williams, right? Like that's the battle that we're going to be watching because they traded for Jamar Taylor. He's had an established season of success in the NFL, and let's be honest, we're all just assuming Brandon Williams is a bust. I mean, that's the reality of the situation is that the Cardinals swung and missed on a third round pick. And so as much as you want Taylor, because you've got him cost controlled for two more years and, you know, things can really work out, you also really want Brandon Williams to win this position, kind of become the guy opposite Patrick Peterson and be the guy moving forward as a young corner in the NFL, one of the most important positions in the NFL. So it's just going to be one to watch because no matter who wins that position, I think if it's an actual battle of good and not who sucks less, I think it's going to be a good thing for the Cardinals in general.
For me, there's only one other sort of front line position battle. I mean, that's not true. There's two. I'm going to go to the defensive side of the ball, and it's dealing with that third safety spot. I wondered how they were going to handle the nickel situation, since it seems they have a few players that seem to excel in the nickel. But when it was announced, when it was said that Budda Baker would be the Tyrann Mathieu and play the nickel role, that then opens up a safety spot. Antoine Bethane's out there. Budda Baker's out there. Who's the other guy? And right now, they have no experience there. You've got B'nai Ben-Wickery, who's a cornerback traditionally, who has limited starting experience in the Carolina system at cornerback. They are moving him at, they're playing him at safety. And I think that might be, he might be the leader of that group. Then you've got Rudy Ford, their late round pick last year, a safety they thought was a corner, but now he's not a corner. He's a safety again. And then a bunch of undrafted guys. So I'm really interested to see how that plays out. If there's going to be, I don't know if we're going to call it a Kime time sign. It might be a McDonough, a Terry time sign.
Yeah, Terry time. That's what Walter that's at Revenge of the Birds wrote. It's Terry time. So, you know, and you're right. It's one of those situations where you're waiting for that other shoe to drop, right? This is what we're going.
I mean, if all the good of this defense looks like it has, then you're gonna take a part-time cornerback and turn him into your main safety. Because guess what? Here's the interesting. Antoine Bethea was not an every-down player. He was listed as a starter. He was not
an every-down player. And that was one of the things that I had lamented more than anything about the Tyrann Mathieu thing is that now you're basically replacing two people because you're having to replace Tyrann Mathieu, and okay, so you're replacing him with Buda Baker, but now you're replacing Buda Baker with who? And like you said, now you're, and then when Bethea comes off the field, who are you replacing Bethea with? Or are you going to keep Bethea on the field more? So it was one of those situations where you're like, oh man, this is, I trust.
Which is why Trey Boston was perfect. Boston was perfect.
And then he had to go and spout his mouth off and make this situation uncomfortable for everybody. So
obviously the other position battle, that this is the frontline one. That's at the receiver spots behind Larry Fitzgerald. And that's just a mess. I don't know what that's going to be like, because you've got Larry Fitzgerald is clearly number one, but who's your number two, number three, number four? Who's going to be number two? You've got Chad Williams, who had his three catches last year, gave no one any sort of confidence that he's going to amount to anything. You got Bryce Butler, career disappointment thus far. You've got Christian Kirk.
And that's putting it lightly.
you got Christian Kirk, the second round pick, but rookie receivers, how is that going to play out? And then you got J.J. Nelson. And J.J. Nelson represents everything that's been wrong with the receiver position for the Cardinals for the last 2 years. And J.J. Nelson is a nice player, but he's already accomplished more than we ever thought. But he does represent every problem the Cardinals have, because, you know, he had 10 receptions in the first 2 weeks last year, finished with 29.
And so it comes down to a couple other positional battles for me. And one of them is maybe I'm making it up. Maybe I am, but I'm really interested what happens with the kicking position.
Because it's understated, but it's there.
Because it feels like Phil Dawson is just kind of written in there. But if Matthew McCrane can push that position, if he can win that job, that's a big chunk of money off. But it's also big in the sense that it gives you stability moving forward. We talked about it when they re-signed Andy Lee to that extension. You could potentially have your special teams unit locked down for the next three seasons.
Well, because they signed Aaron Brewer to a four-year deal.
Yeah, and
four-year deal.
Right, and then have Lee. So it's, you know, it's just one of those. Like I said, it's understated because it's kickers. I mean, who cares, right? Like, we'll find a kicker.
It's like a punter battle, but we remember what it's like when your punter is Drew Butler and everyone else that they tried to bring in, you know, but then they do well elsewhere. So, yes. So it's great, especially because Dawson was bad and it was really interesting. Dawson was both bad and good last year. He didn't miss any kicks that really mattered, but he missed a lot of kicks and he did play well down the stretch. So he was both bad. It was an odd year because he was both bad and good. And yeah, then everything else for me, there's very understated depth battles that is interesting. How is the running back position going to play out? What's going to happen on the offensive line depth? Because you've got some recent draft picks in Evan Bame and Will Holden, who are previous regime guys, but they drafted a Corey Cunningham. They drafted Mason Cole. Are you going to keep Mason Cole and Evan Bame as depth? John Wetzel seems like he's probably, based on what he's done, probably deserves to be a lock. But what's going to happen at the depth of the offensive line? What's going to happen?
Well, when you bring that up, too, it's a really good state or question, because we're again talking about a new regime. So this isn't Arians and Harold Goodwin and Larry Zerline. This is Ray Brown now. So who is his John Wetzel? You know, who is his A.Q. Shipley? The guys that we kind of lament being on the roster every year, but who are the guys that he picks to kind of that are his guys? And you know, those are all questions I think people have quite a bit, and that it, you know, every coach kind of has their guys in that way.
Well, and there's other it's kind of the case of what the heck are they going to do at the position? What's going to happen at tight end? What's going to happen behind? Well, what's going to happen at linebacker behind the starters? You look at the linebackers. Okay, Jeremy Cash is probably locked. Scooby Wright, maybe, but and then kind of the secondary depth positions. You're like, there's a whole bunch of depth play where you're like, I have no idea how that's going to play out. And tight end is the biggest question mark for me, because they have an injured Jermaine Gresham as their only established player. You've got Ricky Seals-Jones, who's got high hope. You've got they're hyping him up as a big time potential big time player. But he's only got 12 catches. And then you got to go, you have a bunch of guys that you probably have never heard of because they've never done anything.
Right. And when it comes to, you know, depth at linebacker and defensive back, something you and I have talked about quite a bit on other episodes, but what do they bring to special teams? And, you know, how much can they help on special teams consistently? That's going to be a big question mark, because what is one of the things that you and I have lamented the last, five seasons? And that's the play on special teams. So, you know, that's who are the special teams guys, and you know, they're going to end up being kind of the depth guys, the end of the roster guys too, right?
Yeah, and that's actually it. Now, as we look at the roster, how things are out of the undrafted rookies, do you kind of have your eye on any of these undrafted kids as to who could be there's going to be, it seems every year there's at least one receiver that we fall in love with. But who are the players that are likely going to make an impact?
So when you look at this roster, it's set up in a way that I think you're going to end up with, you know, probably two or three, and they're all going to be in the defensive backs. And the first one that's really kind of caught my eye, so to speak, is Dietrich Nichols, a guy that I liked coming out of South Florida. I had seen him a little bit, seen some of his work. And when you watch him, he's kind of that guy that reminds me of the Steve Wilks kind of prototype defensive back, a guy that can play in man in situations, but is more comfortable in zone, playing with the ball in front of him and attacking. And so I'm going to be really interested to watch Nichols in his kind of battle moving forward.
For me, a player that I've kind of got my eyes on, and I don't think it'll be so much for rotation, but Zeke Turner out of Washington. And he's, you know, he's kind of the Deion Buchanan type build and type role. Only here's the thing. He made a name for himself on special teams at Washington. I'm sure he's close with Budda Baker. fellow safety. He's a guy that I think is going to make some noise on special teams, and probably could. He's kind of like my favorite undrafted guy to crack the roster in that sense.
Well, and you talked about the safety position. You talked about the depth behind there and you know, not signing Trey Boston and things like that. Well, Turner's kind of listed right now as the main backup, right? So I'm with you on that. Like, he's a guy that I love the highlights, because the film's not great. That's why he wasn't drafted. You know, that's why he was an undrafted free agent. But the highlights, the plays that stand out on him, you're like, ooh, man, if this guy could just be a little more consistent. And so, but that's the difference in going undrafted and not. So the last one for me is a guy that I like the signing immediately when the information came out. I've watched him because I watched his teammate quite a bit last year, and that's Corey Willis. And so Willis always kind of showed up on the film. And when you watch him and you watch the way he plays, again, he's a guy that's a bit undersized. He's a bit smaller. But he was always quicker than fast, right? Like, he was always a guy that played at a high level. And those Central Michigan guys were a lot of fun to watch last year. And I think that he's going to be the wide receiver that everybody kind of falls in love with. I think he's going to end up on the practice squad. I really do. Because I don't think there's a spot for him this year on this roster with the drafting of Christian Kirk.
Well, and unless Chad Williams is, and you really already have four wide receiver spots pretty set with Fitz, Kirk, Butler, and Williams. And even J.J. Nelson, I don't know. I don't know about him. If he's got the experience and he's got some talent there, but
he also offers a dynamic that Willis doesn't right now. And that's why I think Willis is like your prime practice squad candidate. I really do.
And at other positions, I don't know who it's going to be. And I don't know anything about these undrafted tight ends, but they have a potential to be there. I don't know much about him, but a name that I know that people were excited about a little bit is Alec James out of Wisconsin. I think, especially since their defensive end depth is kind of suspect. I mean, you've got Marcus Golden, you've got Benson Mayoa, but you're going to need someone else back there. So, oh, I forgot that kid out of Germany. He's going to be fun to watch. That kid out of Germany is going to be fun to watch.
I was going to let you pronounce his name. I didn't want
to
take all the
time. I don't even remember how to pronounce this, but
Mbarak Djiri.
Oh, yes. Mbarak Djiri. That's right. Mbarak Djiri. So, but yeah, I think him or Alec James, I think there's a good chance that one of those two can find their way on the very back end of the roster.
Right. And it's a little different this year. Remember, like, the Cardinals, they signed Benson Mawaya, but they have nobody really past Chandler Jones and Marcus Golden. And so, you know, now you typically like to have four on the roster. And so, and with Golden already starting on the pup list, which isn't exactly a surprise, coming off the ACL tear, it's, you're talking about Chandler Jones and Benson Mawaya right now. I mean, there's a chance that, like you and I've talked about, that Golden isn't a full go until October, maybe even November. I mean, he'll still be on the game day roster. Like, I'd be surprised if he had to start on the pup list, but he'll be on the game day roster, but he'll probably be a rotational guy to start with. So this is really a golden opportunity, like you said, for Ndara or James to really kind of, or Djiri, sorry, or James to really kind of, you know, grab the bull by the horns and take take control of their own destiny, so to speak. And so it's going to be really interesting to see how that goes.
You know, as we hit the final little part of the show, I wanted to talk about players that we think are likely to disappoint, and then the players that we want on the roster but probably won't make the roster, because that's going to happen. I'm going to point to, well, even though he's one of my players that I'm watching, I think Bryce Butler is a prime candidate to disappoint, because as much as I don't know, I haven't talked to him personally yet, that's just what he's done his career. He just has not been productive. For me, the two players that are most likely to disappoint, it's simply because of the height they're being given, would be Bryce Butler and Ricky Seals-Jones. I don't know what to expect from Ricky Seals-Jones. It's still only a second-year playing tight end, and I don't know. I mean, he'll have opportunities to play. Those are the two players that I think are probably the most likely to not live up to what people are expecting out of them.
Yeah, and I think both of those are fair. You know, the guy I'm most worried about that's going to disappoint, and it's actually two guys, and they're the ones that are starting on the PUP list, and I'm just worried that Jermaine Gresham is going to be sapped of kind of what athleticism he have left. Remember, he's 30. It's not like he's a young guy that just tore his Achilles. He's a 30-year-old. He's had chronic back issues in the NFL, and now he's torn an Achilles. And then Marcus Golden was always a guy that relied really on his motor. He relied on being a relentless worker. And so I won't question whether or not either of them can come back and produce, but I just don't think that they're going to be healthy going into training camp. And so it's going to be kind of a slow process to start the season.
And as we look at the last little bit, and that's players we want to make the roster that we probably won't. You know, there's two guys in particular for me. Elijah Penny is one. He made great strides. He showed some promise. But right now, he seems to be behind everyone on the depth chart. So he's not really playing running back. And so he's probably not going to make the team as a running back. But they have a veteran fullback in front of him, and they have him kind of playing H-back tight end. So maybe the versatility helps him make the roster. But if you look at the running back, you're going to have David Johnson. You're going to have Chase Edmonds. You're going to have TJ Logan. So it's going to come down to, I think, and I don't think Sherman Beatty is a person. So he's a guy on the depth chart. So it's going to come down to DJ Foster and Elijah Penny. And in particular, DJ has gotten praise for his blocking by Steve Wilks. And when you get down the depth chart at running back, you want someone who can play special teams. Foster can play special teams. He can do some returning. And you want someone who can also block. I want Penny to make the team because I like him, but I don't know if he's going to make it.
Yeah, and that's a tough one because, like you said, he's a guy that's worked really hard for the Cardinals and done a nice job. You know, when you look at this team, after the starters, it's really a crapshoot on a lot of guys. And so one guy I'll say is Will Holden. And, again, it's because I don't know what this coaching staff is going to be looking for. And you might say, well, he was a draft pick, but he was a fifth round pick last year. I mean, it really isn't like it was a huge investment.
We saw the same thing in Cole Toner. We thought they liked him and then they cut him.
Right. And they just grabbed Corey Cunningham. Right. So,
yes, and I wrote about that. I said, Will Holden's probably is going to be hard to make this roster because he's either gotta beat out John Wetzel, which seems unlikely.
And they've talked really glowingly about Corey Cunningham. Like, they seem to really be high on what Cunningham offers from an athletic standpoint. I mean, the conversation about him maybe, you know, catching the ball and things like that, like, it's insane. So clearly he is more on the radar at this point than Holden. And so, you know, you hit it on the head. It's Cole Toner all over again, like where you think that they like him, but it's just there's too many others involved.
And for me, the last guy that I see, and that I'm a little bit worried about Evan Bame. And
I would agree with that.
They drafted Mason Cole. Now, you haven't seen him at center. And everyone, you know, Bruce Arians said it. You heard Steve Wilks say it in the draft room, how they, you know, they like Evan Bain. But do they see Mason Cole as a center? And if they do, because we know Abame has not worked out really. He's not been good at guard. But if he's a center, why'd they go draft another center? Now, Cole can play guard, but if he impresses, because where he's been, what Cole's been doing, he's been taking reps at center. That's what he's been doing. And so if he shows that he's ready to be AQ Shipley's backup, that could mean adios for Evan, because can he step in and play guard? But they probably have better options to play guard on as their backups.
Right, exactly. And right now, Bane's listed as the backup right guard. And as you said, Cole kind of looks like he's going to be the guy that takes the interior swing position. But if it's not Cole there, you know, what about John Wetzel? And so, like you said, it's a thing. I agree with you there. And so you could be talking about two 2017 draft picks off the bat being cut. I mean, yes, it's a fourth and fifth rounder, but that's less than ideal. You'd like one of those guys to stick in year two. You know, the final guy that I would like to make the roster, but I don't think is going to be an undrafted free agent. And that's why I didn't bring him up in the last conversation. That's Arius Moore, a guy that they've praised quite a bit, actually, this offseason. I just don't see where he fits in this depth chart at this time. Like you said, it's going to be, you're going to have Reddick, Bynes, and Buchanan, and then it's kind of wide open behind them, but Moore seems like he's pretty far behind others in terms of the special teams tier right now.
Right. And with that, is there anything else that you want to bring up in terms of camp, in terms of programming? We will, since camp's beginning at the end of this week, we won't even see any pads on until if we were to record a show next week. So this is our last two-week break. We're going to come back in 2 weeks, and then we'll be talking about camp and getting ready for preseason games, and we'll be back every week after that. Anything left in terms of camp that's worth bringing up before we come back in a couple of weeks?
No, not right now. I mean, I think we're heading in the right direction. I'm excited to see how the first camp under Steve Wilks turns out and really starts.
All right. And with that, we will bid adieu. We'll say adios until next time. That's Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com. This is Jess Root from CardsWire.com. And we'll be back in 2 weeks with a new show talking about training camp and the preseason.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.